introducing myself. I'm Bongani Koha, the Chief Executive of Television State. And then with me are my executives. We have 7 executives, and today 4 of the 7. And let me use this opportunity to also indicate, Chairperson, that you are a transformed executive. 4 of the 7 executives are female. So we brought 2 now, and we'll be bringing 2 in October. On my left-hand side is Mozunga Mashamba. Mozunga Mashamba is the executive manager for Turnaround Solution. Earlier on, when UI was making their presentation, they continuously referred to Turnaround Solution. So Mozunga will be presenting the section dealing with Turnaround Solution. And then next on the left-hand side of Mozunga is the gentleman I always bring with me, our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Peggy Jamini. And then on the extreme left, we also have one of our executives, Ms. Lalani van Ransbeck. One of our flagship programs, honorable members, looks at ensuring that SMMEs and cooperatives are sustainable. So Lalani will be taking us through her program with emphasis on SMMEs and cooperatives and how we assist them to not only be sustainable, but also to create jobs. And just as a way of outline, we will be indicating who Productivity SA is, our vision, mission, mandate. We'll talk to structure and governance. We'll look at our key programs. And then we'll indicate what are our priority sectors. And we will also be cautious to say we accept all sectors, but there are certain sectors we want to focus on, and we'll indicate why. And then we'll then go on to program focus, where we'll be looking at 4 areas. And as indicated, 2 of the 4 areas will be tackled by the executives that are with me. We will then move on to look at the finances. And with me is the CFO who will tackle the finances. And then we will look at the strategic partnerships, because Productivity SA is able to make the kind of impact that is making because of strategic partnership, and will only grow if we continue to come up with more strategic partnerships. And then we will also be looking at future priority areas, which is the areas that Productivity SA will be focusing on in the next financial year, starting in April. In terms of who are we? Productivity SA, we are an organization for South African businesses. So we look at businesses, we look at industries, we look at the members of the general public, and our work involves advising. We implement programs. We monitor solutions just to assess the impact that we're making, and we evaluate progress, and this is aimed at promoting a more competitive South Africa. And then in terms of 2 key words that define who we are, which is the word productivity and competitiveness, we normally try to simplify the way people should understand productivity, because every time we use input-output ratio, we tend to create an impression that productivity is elusive, but productivity is everybody's business. And simply put, productivity is how well resources, so here we're talking about inputs, which can be your material, your people, your equipment, so how those are well used to produce outputs, and your outputs could be your products or services. So that's how the relationship comes about. And then we pursue productivity, not for its sake, but we are trying to contribute to improvement of competitiveness of our economy. And competitiveness also simplifies is the ability of a nation or its enterprises. So we're talking about the economy and enterprise to gain global market share for inputs, products, and services. So you are able to increase your market share if you are productive. You're producing at a lower cost, so you are able to improve your turnaround, and your products are reliable. And then in terms of the vision, we lead and inspire a productive and competitive South Africa. Hence, I explain the word productive and competitiveness. And then our mission, what do we do? Who do we do it for? We improve the productivity of South Africa by diagnosing, so we don't just jump in and make improvement, but we establish what the challenges are. We advise, We implement programs, so we'll be telling you more about those programs, and we monitor solutions and evaluate progress in at improving productivity. And our mandate, if somebody were to say, what is your mandate? So our mandate is that we are tasked in terms of Employment Services Act with the responsibility of improving productivity in South Africa and to serve the interest of government, business, as well as labor. And then in terms of structure, Productivity SA is a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of Employment Services Act. We are report to the Minister of Labor. We are a tripartite organization, and I'm also happy to announce that for the first time since this organization was established, we also have a transformed board since December this year. So of the 7 board members, 4 are female, whereas in the past we only had 1 female in our board. So that has been a significant improvement. And these are drawn from organized business labor as well as government, headed by an independent chair. And in terms of our offices, we have head office in Midrand, and we have 2 regional offices in KZN and Western Cape. But that doesn't inform the intervention, so we intervene in all provinces, so we don't necessarily need an office for us to be able to implement our programs. We can travel to different venues and companies and be able to implement our programs. And then in terms of the 4 key areas that I was alluding to, we are having enterprise productivity and competitiveness, so we are focusing on companies that are stable, and we want to ensure that they continue to grow and employ more people. And the second component looks at micro-enterprise and cooperative to ensure that we improve their productivity capabilities, and this section will be taken care of by my colleague Lalani. And then we also have knowledge management and research, where we do not only secure knowledge, but we also ensure that it is secured within the organization and is shared, and we also conduct productivity-related researches, and we are also involved in productivity awareness. And then in terms of the programs, as indicated, we have turnaround solution, which I said is headed by our executive, Musunga Mashamba. We have productivity organization solution, which is headed by Lalane van Rensburg. And then we have value chain competitiveness, which is headed by Silo Musai, who is not with us. And then we have productivity awareness, which has key component being marketing, headed by Rebecca Palazzi. And then in terms of key priority sectors, we believe that if we focus on the priority sectors that are driving economy, the other sectors can consequently benefit. So we have huge programs in the manufacturing sector, agriculture sector. We assist mining in terms of improving relationship between management and labor. So recently we have entered into an agreement with public service and administration where we say public servants are enablers of the economy, or public services enabler of an economy. So if we can work with them in terms of improving the productivity, it will benefit the economy. So we also have program in agro-processing. And then in terms of program focus, I will now hand over to Musunga Mashamba to take us through the turnaround solution of the social plan, which is funded by UI. Over to you.
Good day, honorable members. I'll be taking you through the turnaround solutions as alluded by the CEO, that it is a program that is funded currently by the UIF. The program's objective is to ensure that we deliver turnaround or contingency plans for those companies that are in distress or faced with extensive financial ruin, or where there's massive job losses and the sustainability challenges. And what's key to the program is that it is an initiative of the 1998 Job Summit and part and parcel of the National Social Plan Program, of which turnaround solutions is the first phase of the social plan program before we are looking at initiatives to save, to manage retrenchments in the second phase of the social plan program. And this, And this presentation here just gives you a sense of the National Social Plan Program, which was which came about in the Job Summit in 1998. So turnaround solutions of the social plan, we play a part in the first phase where we are looking at opportunities to reverse extensive job losses. So there's opportunities for us to turn the company around before it goes into the second phase, which is managed by the CCMA, Department of Labor, and also that is where you'd find that the training layoff scheme also plays, where we are looking at interventions or alternatives in the second phase. So what we do predominantly is saying, can we get the companies, sign the companies on? It is a voluntary program where companies that are in distress need to voluntarily sign up with us, and then we see what are the customized solutions that we need to implement in those companies to reverse the likelihood of job losses. We've got for 2015-16, these are our indicators of the key result area being saving jobs that are displaced through different interventions to ensure that at the end of the day we save those jobs. So the different indicators is also linked to our methodology or our framework what we follow. When a company signs on, it is through different ways where we find others referrals from other strategic partners such as CCMA, URF, or the general public, where a company, either even organized labor, they will call us to say, there's a company we believe that can benefit from the program. We do presentation at the company level, or we do presentation at an association level, where organized business says that we have created a platform for you to come and present, and companies that are part and parcel of that association sign on. And then from there on, we do what we then form what we call a future forum, and that is the first step where we say there needs to be an internal steering committee in, within the organization that is representative of all the main stakeholders of that organization. So management are represented, employees are represented, labor is represented in this future forum, and then that future forum becomes a plan. So in future, you'd see a lot of reference to future forums established, which would be the number of clients that you've signed on, individual clients or participants of the program. And then for 2015-16, we are looking at 100 signing on, at least 150 of those. The marketing executive also does a lot of work in terms of marketing the program through print media, radio, and other opportunities where strategic partners invite us to do presentations, either at different associations, organized business, or organized labor, where we conscientize strategic partners of the benefits of signing on and signing on in the program before it's too late, so we can then preserve or the jobs before it is then too late, or before they move into the 189A or a second phase of the social plan. The second step of the program is then after the acquisition and the signing off of that future forum, we also then capacitate that future forum, which I mentioned earlier that it is made up of management, employee representatives, or organized labor. We then capacitate her that they then partner with us in terms of finding out of the root causes of the issues that are causing the company distress or decline. And then we together also have financial assessments that we run that, based on audited financials. In the absence of that, we use management accounts to verify from a financial point of view the extent of the financial gain. And then from there on, we then customize, we get a sense of, say, where the bleeding has occurred in the business, and then we try and ensure that we then put together strategies, relevant strategies in that enterprise organization to remedy that decline or distress. So the work plan, when we say we've developed work plans, is turnaround strategies that are customized at an enterprise level to them with strategies that will then reverse the decline or the distress. The third one then is then where we have an agreed plan to turn the company around. It has been signed off by the Future Forum, and then we start implementing the strategies or the initiatives that are necessary in that organization. We then see the implementation through. we close that out to, and then we then document whether we do the before and after, and we measure that that improvement. We also then monitor, and we have an M&E element to the program where we leave the company for at least 6 months to be able to see that the interventions are sustainable and if we still need to do anything extra to ensure that also the lessons and the learnings that we have, that we've inculcated that into the business and in the sustainable implementation of those initiatives. Part and parcel of the capacitation that we do at a client level, we also have a training called the Productivity Champions Training that complements the impact assessment, where we ensure that we identify the company, we help the organization identify productivity champions, such that we then leave them with productivity champions that have been trained for us, for them to be able to populate what we call the early warning system, such that they're able to see what are those critical indicators they need to look at and focus on, and where should they be focusing on even in the future after our exit. We often find that in the absence of that, when we leave the organization, the systems also fall flat. So we've got productivity champions that we train them on productivity competencies to be able to measure critical indicators, and that helps to address the performance of the organization, and there's a conversation going within the company. Most companies that we sign on often say we didn't realize that the damage or the decline was to this extent. So productivity is about if we cannot measure, we cannot manage. The number of estimated jobs that we'll be impacting on would be 7,500, and then the math behind that number is we take the forecast of the 150 clients that we hope to sign on, and you multiply that by on an average 50 employees. But we also, in the outskirts of the outside of the urban areas that we look at, in the rural areas, we also look at smaller numbers. We cluster those in the same sectors so that we are still able to give them the service. So this is just still a mess around how what we focused on, but we do take on smaller numbers and go across the country. The outcomes of the programs, of those turnaround programs, is that one, there is improvement in productivity and also just an understanding of productivity. We are productivity champions. We are the productivity champions of the country, so it is our responsibility to ensure that with whatever enterprise we sign on in terms of turnaround solutions, they have an understanding of what productivity is, and we get them on board in terms of a continuous improvement journey. We also see, we anticipate that once a turnaround has been successful, we should be able to see that in the bottom line in terms of profitability. We also see an improvement in operational performance, whether it is in human resources, operations, marketing, finances. We should be able to then look at that to say, this is what was before, this was the intervention that we implemented, and this is what after. There is also, because of the capacitation and because of the future forum, which is part and parcel of the terms and conditions of the program, we see an effective or an improved communication between employees and management, where we're getting them in a future forum to say, let's then collectively discuss what are those things that we should be implementing, what are those low-hanging fruits that we should be implementing together, what ideas can we come on board to ensure that we save the jobs, and we also ensure that there's sustainability or job retention even in the future. I also mentioned that part and parcel of the training is that we want to live in the organizations that we've dealt with, and what we call an early warning system that works like a traffic light system. We leave them with critical indicators. They're able to see on a month-to-month basis what is on a red, what is on a green, what is on an orange, what are the things that they should be worried about. And they're able to call us back to say, we have been worried, we've got a red flag on two indicators, whether it's sales or whether it's operations or turnaround time, and they're able to call back and we see how we can then adjust and help them. That has been the program outcomes. Thank you.
I will now hand over to Lalani.
Thank you, sir. Honorable members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to start with a little mantra. And when we leave here today, if that's what we remember, then it was worthwhile. Productivity is everybody's business. So it's ours, but it's yours as well. You do what you do today better than you did it yesterday, and tomorrow you improve on today. This is the core of what we do. Improvement, continuous improvement. I work for a wonderful organization that inspires productivity. So everything we do is aimed at inspiring productivity. How wonderful. So my unit's name is Productivity Organizational Solutions, and I'm just going to touch on a couple of our programs, and then I would like to invite you after the session to contact me freely if you want more information on it, because it's everybody's business. The objective of this program is an assessment and productivity training program that gives individuals the right attitude, so it's a mindset thing, knowledge and skills capacity, so there's definitely skills transfer that takes place, to become a more competent asset to their organization, a productive citizen. It is also a short-term intervention program for productivity projects. So in other words, it's scalable. We can do training or we can turn it into a program, depending on the time frame and the requirements of the clients. The strategic focal areas of this program, in a nutshell, is there's an assessment center that says that anything that you can measure, you can improve on. So everything that we do with training goes through an assessment center. So let's say hypothetically we're working with an aspiring entrepreneur who's not yet trading. Then we would simulate business through this assessment center so that we can show improvement for that entrepreneur to motivate them. Second one, very important cog in this vehicle, is education and training. We believe that if we can approach every single educator and ETD, every trainer, every skills development facilitator in South Africa, we can improve productivity in schools and various other aspects of South Africa. So we do have a fully fledged education program, which I'll speak to on the next slide. We have small enterprise development, which is split into two components, SME and cooperative development. We have customized a cooperative solution unique to the South African cooperative market because it has its own unique ecosystem, and we have made partners to provide us with access to co-ops in South Africa. This is a national program and it is well received. The market is insatiable. Then we have productivity improvement projects, which is just a fancy way of saying that after we train and we see with this early warning system that my colleague has referred to, this dashboard, says there's a red, then we fix it. So this is what the productivity improvement project is about. So this circle basically says we measure, we train, we assist via skills transfer, we measure again, and then we showcase whether it's a success or a failure. Targets for 2015-16, and they may look big, but they're not that big. South Africa is a very, very big country, and we'd love to do so much more. The first area of capacitation, where we approach entrepreneurs and we train them on productivity principles, and I'd just like to snapshot on that, is 5,500 for the next financial year. That basically, it's not an awareness session where we just tell them about productivity. We have to physically take them through a program where we do a baseline. We take them through a training program. We try to inspire their minds and their hearts, and then we measure their progress so that they can go into what is called the workplace challenge, if they qualify for that, or if we can assist them with other improvement projects. The next one, very close to my heart as well, is the number of educators trained, 950. This target does not seem big, but it is a very difficult target to achieve. It's also a national target, so we go to different schools and FETs where we try and change the hearts and the minds of the educators working with our new entrepreneurs in the making. Because if they are productive educators, imagine what they're going to unleash in their classrooms. Then we have number of workers trained. We used 900 as a target for the next year, but it's by no means limiting us. We have access to so many projects where productivity improvement is required. So the next category for the category after this for managers and workers usually run hand in hand. It's different programs in the same entities. We have management programs where we teach managers to inspire productivity and how to measure it. You can't just force it down. You need to know how to inspire it. And then you have the worker program. We understand your impact on the bottom line of the business and why you should be a productive person and why you should go home and create a productive household. So these programs are not just the soft side of it, but it has a strong component of that as well. Because if you understand and you buy into a program, you'll participate. And then the number of SDFs, excuse the acronym, SDFs, the number of skills development facilitators, 550. So we go to the CETAS and we basically unleash our programs there. We train their SDFs and we capacitate them so that they can pay it forward. We are one entity in South Africa, is a big place. So we do what is called the education, training and development approach, where we train and then we unleash them to go and train and we monitor the progress. So that's how the model basically replicates itself and covers South Africa. And then we have a graduate program. It says number of graduates engaged, 5. It also seems small, but it's not, because if you think of what we try to do with the graduates is we create them into, or we unleash productivity ambassadors onto the market. So they then become productivity champions in South Africa. And can you imagine the impact that 5 a year would have? So in a nutshell, that's the target of this program. And they are difficult targets to achieve. And if I can just leave one message with this program, that if you know of anyone who needs productivity training or can assist with productivity in South Africa, or you just want to find out if we have a program that can accommodate you, you can contact me directly. The outcomes of the program, just in a snapshot, is to increase the number of intermediaries facilitating the spread of productivity competencies. In other words, we want to create a productivity epidemic in South Africa. It has to have become a household name, like cost saving is a household name. Productivity should be too. Generating and disseminating knowledge and key productivity drivers. Why be productive? We want a basic understanding of it. To increase the number of educators, learners, workers, managers, skills development facilitators, parliamentary members, anybody who can just unleash productivity. And then to increase the number of public sector organizations, including municipalities, we have a couple of projects running, which we're trying to showcase every year in October, which is Productivity Month. We showcase these successes, and that's how we get the pipeline for that. To enhance public sector efficiency and effectiveness, because we want to be a competitive country. And then to increase productivity levels amongst a number of small enterprises, because this is the golden thread. If we can make our small businesses productive and they become productive champions, imagine in South Africa we could become. And then to build the productive capabilities of small enterprises. So basically, whether you are an aspiring entrepreneur, whether you are an entrepreneur that has started, but you know you can do better, contact us because you probably can. In a nutshell, that's my program, and I really value your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Lalani. As indicated, the Value Chain Competitiveness Program is headed by Mr. Silo Masai. The program basically looks at 4 areas. The first aspect looks at research, the Vote-Based Challenge Program, which is funded by GTI, we have knowledge management, as well as information and technology. So the research we generate and provide decision makers, who can be in government, in business, or labor, with information that is productivity related, whereas the workplace challenge, which I will present to you in detail, improves productivity and competitiveness of South African firms and sectors through implementation of continuous improvement principle in the workplace. So when you look at a workplace challenge in relation to turnaround solution says let's react when there are threats of job losses, whereas workplace challenge says let's go to those companies that are stable and let's help them to grow, become sustainable, and be able to compete at a global platform. So the programs are complementing each other and the approach is slightly different. And then knowledge management, we have to ensure that we support total knowledge within the organization, because we work hard in terms of capacitating our staff, partnering to develop our knowledge base. So we also need to ensure that we have support structure in terms of ITC infrastructure, as well as being able to capture that knowledge such that we are not only sharing it within the organization, but we are retaining it such that when we lose staff members, we do not lose knowledge, but the knowledge is retained within the organization. So wherever there are good practices that have been implemented in a particular program, we make sure that that information is shared within the organization and that is stored properly. And then in terms of research, we do research and knowledge generation to influence policy debates and decision making by investors as well as other stakeholders. We say for this particular decision, this would be productivity implication of that particular decision making. And then in terms of the targets set by this particular program, on an annual basis, they generate productivity statistics. Last year, we launched the productivity statistics at the end of September, and we were honored by the presence of our Deputy Minister, Honorable Patekile Holomisa. And then what we also do is to conduct competitiveness studies where about 60 countries participate, and we are able to indicate how our economy is doing in terms of government efficiency, business efficiency, how the economy is performing, as well as the impact of infrastructure on productivity. So this year's study is being compiled, and we trust that either by the end of May or beginning of June, we will be releasing the results in terms of where are we experiencing challenges, what's the nature of those challenges, and some recommendations on how we can deal with that. And then the third aspect is that we have entered into partnership with the Department of Public Service and Administration to conduct a study on public sector productivity and performance and service delivery. So we are assisting in terms of saying this should be productivity measures, because as my colleague said earlier on, you cannot manage what you cannot measure. So we are assisting in terms of coming up with the measurements, and beyond that, we will probably be assisting in terms of how productivity can be improved. And then we also run workshops and seminars, because we do not just want to generate information, but we want to go out there and say, let's debate this information, let's make sure that we understand each other, let's make sure that we can improve the way we generate information, not just to publish information. And then we also have a report on best ways to manage performance, productivity, and remuneration in public employment services, and this study we are doing in collaboration with the Department of Labor, because as you know that in the month of September, if I'm not mistaken, we'll have promulgation of Public Employment Services Act. So as productivity, say we have done a study in terms of saying this is how Public Employment Services Act can contribute to job creation in terms of studies that we've done in other countries. And then let me come to the Workplace Challenge Program, which I said looks at companies that are stable and looks at ensuring that they are world-class and competitive. So the objective of this program is the improvement of productivity and competitiveness of enterprises. The new focus is to increase the competitiveness and therefore employment, because we do not only want to see these companies growing only and becoming sustainable, but we want to ensure that as they grow with the savings that they generate, they are able to create employment. And we are also looking at ensuring that we go to the underdeveloped regions of the country and make an impact in those areas, because it's quite easy to go to urban areas and the main economies, but it also takes a lot of effort, and it makes a huge difference if we go to the underdeveloped regions of the country and make an impact. And then in terms of the indicators of this program, the number of new enterprises that will be joining the program is 201, and then we'll be doing capacity building workshop where 73 companies will be participating, so that's the number of workshops that we'll be having. And then what we also do within this program is we train change facilitators. These are our ambassadors that must go out there and bring about change. So on an annual basis, there's a number that we are going to train. And then we are also looking at number of companies that are implementing, because once the company has been trained, it moves into implementation. And then we'll also be issuing newsletter around this company, because we believe as an organization that over and above individual companies interventions, other companies that are not participating in the program can be inspired by the case studies that are coming out of these companies that are participating. So we'll also do a research and development of the Green Productivity Toolkit. So 2 years ago, what we did was to say, let's also look at the sustainability of the environment. And through our partnership with Japanese Productivity Center, we developed a Green Productivity Toolkit. So now we'll be going to various companies and say, you can be productive without compromising the environment, and we'll be demonstrating ways in which they can be productive without a negative impact on the environment. And we trust that we'll have a minimum case studies of 9 that we will be sharing with companies that are participating in the program as well as those that are outside the program. And then in terms of marketing and communication, as indicated earlier on, this is an area that is led by Rebecca Palace, and it's got 2 components. The first component looks at informing, educating, and leading South Africans in discussions on issues pertaining to productivity. So whenever there are debates that are happening within the economy, the unit that they contact is our marketing and communication. And it looks at ensuring that there is awareness about what we are doing. There's a print. We feature a lot on radio. There are online information. There's online information. We conduct seminars, as indicated earlier on. We run workshops mainly. Workshops and seminars are mainly run in the month of October. But we also try to have some events taking place in other months of the year. And this unit is also responsible for awards and productivity month. The awards are happening at every province except for 2, which is the Northern Cape as well as Free State, because of limited resources and partnership. And then it happens at the national level in the month of October. And the good news is that through partnership with Ekurhuleni Metro, we will be holding the National Productivity Month and the awards on the 1st of October. And then the second aspect of this program, it looks at building appropriate relationship between productivity and stakeholders. Earlier on, I alluded to the fact that our ability to make impact in the economy is highly dependent on our ability to create partnerships, because we have limited funding, but through partnerships we are able to make a bigger reach. We initiate, own, and participate in relevant discussion forums, so we come up with a topic on which discussion can happen, or alternatively, we get invited to discuss. And then we participate in invitation to lectures and seminars. At the moment, 2 institutions are involving us, which is Vets University as well as UJ, but we also trust that we'll be able to get involved in more institutions in terms of ensuring that we influence the curriculum and we share the practical aspect of productivity. And in terms of the target, media articles published, what also gave rise to working hard in terms of ensuring that we have wider media coverage, is that about 10 years ago, the criticism about productivity was that we were not visible. And we started setting the target at 60, 70, 90, but we are sitting now at 395. And again, the reason we are able to be at this level is not only our own initiatives, but it's because of partnerships that we have in place. We are now getting invited to seminars and workshops. Recently, we participated at the Energy Indaba, will also be extensively involved in the manufacturing in Durban, which will be taking place in June, which will be happening in Ekurhuleni, and that is aimed at ensuring that we make meaningful participation in terms of ensuring that manufacturing sector continues to grow. Because as you know that manufacturing used to contribute significantly to the GDP of our economy, but over the years it's been dwindling, but Productivity SA together with Ekurhuleni Metro and other partners did the first manufacturing endeavor. So this year we'll be proceeding to implement the outcomes of the first endeavor. So what we also do, we do monthly electronic newsletter that ensures that we disseminate information. We have quarterly magazine, we produce annual reports, and as indicated, we run 9 hours, and then we have workshops and seminars conducted in various regions, and we partner with major stakeholders. So we are going to identify 10 strategic partners that are not in place and say, these we also need in order for us to be able to make a bigger impact in the economy. And we also run print and electronic campaign mainly in the October month, which is Productivity Month. And then what is the outcome of this program? The outcomes are as follows. It creates awareness of the importance of productivity and competitiveness. So we do this mainly through seminars. We create association of productivity concepts with productivity. So what we have experienced over time is that whenever there's a debate and the word productivity is brought about, we are called upon to give an opinion. So we would want to see this association growing. South Africans embrace the concept of productivity that leads to change behavior. Because once when we have changed our mindset, and we are in an economy that has embraced productivity, we will be able to not only increase productivity, but improve our competitiveness level. And then once we entrench brand awareness, that leads to strong brand equity. As our brand is increasing, we see more organizations coming to us and seeking our assistance in terms of how they can improve their productivity. And then we also want to be at the forefront of productivity thinking and discourse. I will now look briefly at the human resource component. Human resource component is headed by Tracy Welly, who will be joining us in the October session. And in terms of this particular aspect of work, we want to ensure that productivity is seen as an employer of choice, but there are quite a number of things that we need to put in place before our employees can confirm that indeed they perceive us as employer of choice. So we've identified critical skills required and behavior attributes. We've done skills audit to say these are the attributes that are required, and let's ensure that we identify people and assess them and inculcate these skills and behavior. And we've categorized talent groups, we've generated career paths, because we do not only always want to employ from outside the organization, but we want to see people rising within the ranks in our own organization. And we'll also be listing development areas. We'll have IDPs. IDPs are generated by supervisors. They look at the performance and identify particular intervention that will lead to improved productivity. So we do that on an annual basis. So we'll also be looking at system process for assessing performance in a fair and equitable manner. We do have a balanced scorecard that we are using, and on an annual basis we engage with employees in terms of assessing its fairness. And also when we conduct employee wellness, we check whether employees are perceiving the performance measurement in place as fair. On an annual basis, we do salary surveys to determine market relatedness of remuneration. What we compare our salaries with is the public sector, so we do not go outside the public sector. So we always ensure that the salary that we are paying compares well with the salaries for the same level within the public sector. And for us to be able to establish if the culture is right, we annually conduct culture survey, and based on that culture survey, we look at the corrective actions and start implementing that in order for us to create an environment where productivity SA will eventually be seen as employer of choice. And then I will now hand over to our CFO to deal with the finance aspect of productivity SA.
Good day to the Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. Just going along with the definition of productivity, I'd like to use the analogy of banking, that if we see a long queue of people walking into a bank, we'll ask them the question, what are you going to do into the bank? The one will say, I just want to withdraw money. Then we'll show them the ATM, because that will be a more efficient way of withdrawing money. Then another one will say, I just want to check my balances and make transfers and so on. And then we'll say, why don't you use the internet? So that, in a nutshell, is the concept of productivity. What my colleagues have alluded to then culminate into the numbers. As you know, that we'll get grants, we'll generate our own revenue, and we have to then doing implementation and then the expenses. This is then our budget for the 2015-2016 financial year. If we start off with revenue, we will have income from sources other than grant funding, totaling about 11.5 million. And then we'll have interest received from other income. What we do is that when we receive grant funding, we invest it whilst we are waiting to implement, so that we run a mini treasury and then we can earn a little income out of that and also be efficient. And then the transfers and the grants received amount to 115 million, giving us a total revenue for the financial year of 127 million. Excuse me. Coming to the other side on expenses, we employ people and we use people to implement the interventions, so we have to naturally remunerate the people, and the remuneration will take the form of salaries, the development, the training, the IDPs that my CEO referred to. So compensation for employees is 55 million, goods and services 71 million, and then the other expenses, depreciation for the assets that we keep, and then sometimes it happens that we have to pay interest, and then the total expenses will then equal our revenue. Just to give a bit of breakdown of where the revenue is coming from, and then the transfers we receive from the Department of Labor, our principal, 45 million, and that accounts for 39% of our total revenue, and then from DTI, who are funding the Workplace Challenge, 8 million, which accounts for 7% of the total funding. And then our colleagues at UIF, and I apologize, that should read Turnaround Solutions, 62 million, which accounts for 53.6%. And then putting that in a pictorial format, you'll see that the big chunk comes from the UIF, followed by the Department of Labor, and then the DTI. Another way of looking at it would be to say, what are the total transfers, i.e. the grants, and then what is the other revenue? The other revenue would then be either what we self-generated or earned in the form of interest. And to put numbers to it, it's 115 for the grants, and then other non-tax revenue, 11.9 million. I will then hand over to my CEO to then take us through the remainder of the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Earlier on, I alluded to the fact that we are highly reliant on partnerships in order to make a bigger impact in the economy. We have recently signed a contract with City of Ekurhuleni, where they say come up with a 10-year program to revitalize manufacturing in the Ekurhuleni area. And for this, for the next financial year, we'll be getting around 6 million. And we trust that after doing pilot work, we'll be able to recommend more work and we'll be able to play a bigger role in terms of improving manufacturing in the country, because as indicated earlier on, the hub of manufacturing is at Ekurhuleni. So if we make a bigger impact, we'll be contributing to improvement of manufacturing productivity and competitiveness. And then secondly, we also have a five-year partnership with Transnet Group, where they are saying, help us to train our service providers. So through that training program, we are able to do more work around enterprise development. So we'll be doing that over a five-year period. And then recently, we've also been asked by SAA to say, help us to look at utilization of our staff. Are we properly utilizing our staff? So we've been conducting that study for SAA. And then the next program is Transnet Freight Rail. And here again, we're also happy to be playing a role in the transport sector, where they've also said we do see volumes increasing, but we are not sure whether we have the right staff levels. So we've been assisting them in terms of measuring the utilization, where we are able to come up with scientific studies that says in this particular area, should your volumes rise to this level, this is the only level that you would need. And in other instances, we've been able to point out that you have enough staff, you don't need to employ. So this will result in huge savings in terms of employment costs for Transnet Freight. And then the next program is Rand Water. We're also happy to be participating in this space, because when you look at inputs, your inputs would be your energy, your water, your transport. So if you are playing an important role with this organization, we will be contributing to producing cheaply. So 2 years ago, we entered into partnership with Rand Water, where they said, come in and improve the culture of productivity in the work environment. So we've been going through that program, and it's coming to an end in 2016, and we also trust that as we go along, the scope will also increase, and we will also be able to help other water bodies and thereby contribute to efficient utilization of water. And then the Sanaco one is Productivity SA relies on people that are working on the ground in terms of getting the relevant stakeholders. South African National Apex Cooperative has got most of its members in rural areas as well as townships. And as a result, we are able to train SMMEs and cooperatives in the township because of the partnership. And on an annual basis, we are able to train more than 3,000 co-ops coming from this constituency. So this is one of the many strategic partners that we have, but we picked up. And then in terms of future key priority areas, what are those priority areas that Productivity will be looking at next year? We'll establish new and foster existing partnerships. We'll look at our strategy and say, who else do we need to bring on board in order for us to impact on manufacturing sector, agriculture sector, as well as mining. So we'll be looking at key partners that will help us in order to improve our impact. We'll evaluate, design, develop, and new and existing products, because we are solution-oriented. We look at the needs of the market and ensure that our products or services talk to those needs. We'll assess, monitor, and evaluate organizational performance, because we believe that we need to lead by example by continuously assessing ourselves in terms of ensuring that we achieve the targets as well as make the necessary impact. We'll assess, measure, monitor, and improve public presence, because we believe that as we are able to generate debates, we are able to run seminars, that should go a long way in improving our impact with regard to public presence. We'll determine, assess, measure, monitor, and improve processes and demonstrate impact. So our processes are continuously subjected to assessment, and what we have embarked on as well is to get ISO 9001 accreditation. So we're very close to achieving that, and we trust that for the year ending 2016, we should report that we achieved ISO 9001 accreditation, which will indicate that our processes are performed consistently. And then lastly, we'll design, implement, and monitor employee value proposition strategy, where we'll be saying, what do we need to do to create a culture where employees are engaged and where they perceive the organization as an employer of choice. So at the next reporting cycle, which is for the year ending 2016, we will report in terms of these six priority areas, how much we've been able to achieve. And that's the presentation for Productivity Day, and from this point we'll be able to take questions. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Honorable von Skarpek, and then Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we need to start by appreciating the report as being presented to us by the entity. But if we look at the functions of this entity, we'll see that there is a weakness in terms of other private companies also doing the same thing. And we are just wondering, are you not duplicating services? Is this weakness becoming a threat, or what's happening there? Also, you mentioned the fact that there's offices located in Cape Town, Gauteng, and Durban, but that doesn't limit you to provide services in other areas, in other provinces. But our concern is with regards to the rural areas and which baseline are you using to go into these areas, into these provinces, or is there a structured program, or how do you get your information to see where's the needs in other provinces? How sustainable are you? If we look at the fact that you raise only 9.3% of your revenue through your own initiative, and that's making me wonder that, or stating that you are therefore relying mostly on transfers from your Department of Labor, from UIF, from other departments to make you sustainable. And if we look at what might happen in future, if we look at the presentation that we've received from UIF stating that they project that they're going to have a deficit in future years maybe, and that might directly impact on you, seeing that you're mostly relying on other on transfers, and how would that be in terms of your sustainability in future? And do you have initiatives to increase your revenue through own initiative? In your SWOT analysis, you identified the threat of becoming absorbed into government departments, for instance. How possible is that threat with the passing of Parliament of the Employment Services Bill, which is due for promulgation? And you set yourself a target of impacting 75,000 jobs, according to your APP, or 7,500 jobs, according to your APP. And if you look at the new targets, you are setting, or the previous year's target, it was 10,400. Now, I'm just wondering, if we look at your budget, you received 93.4 million in 2014-15, but that has increased to 127.6 million in 2015-16. But yet you've decreased your target in terms of impacting jobs. And then I want to know, what is your staff establishment? And how much is spent on consultants? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Collins.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two comments. The first one is on page 30 of the presentation. You listed your awareness campaigns, media articles, and electronic newsletters and magazines and so on. There are about 11 or 12 of us on this parliamentary committee. Could we request that your electronic newsletters be emailed to us when you send it to everybody else? I'd love to read about what it is that you do from month to month, and perhaps your quarterly magazine, if it is available, if we could get it in our pigeonholes, then we can also just monitor what goes on in your entity, which would be really helpful. And then just one question. I don't know whether you've done any modelling on the impact of a possible national minimum wage and how that would affect productivity in South Africa. Thanks.
Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. Let me appreciate the report tabled to us, but I need two clarities. On every slide where you have targets, I think we have a different understanding, myself and yourself, on targets. Because to me, a target is what you intend to do. You are not reflecting what have you managed to achieve out of the target you have set yourself. Also, on the slide on your finances, more so on the one on page 35, it's reflecting that you are living from hand to mouth. All the money you received, you spent to the last cent. Is that possible? Or you spend as you receive? How come that you spend everything? There's no deficit, there's no extra. If you were given 50 cents, you spend the whole 50 cents as if you are paid as a service provider instead of being an entity that is working on its own program. And also the fact that you rely more on what you are given. I want to rehash what Honorable Fazgavich has asked. You rely more on being given than on generating your own funds so that you can be self-sustainable. You can't survive on the 9% you are able to generate. And remember, the grants that you are receiving are not fixed ones because they depend on the funder's state of finances. How then do you think you need to come up so that you reach a stage where the donation or the grant come as a top up to what you are already doing to improve on your programs rather than to say your programs are dependent on grants? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, this has been a good presentation, but I just want to ask one question because I've been covered by other speakers before me. Is this the first financial year that the entity is going to be performing its job? Because we are not appraised of what they have done in the past. We only see what they are going to do in the current financial year, 2015-16.
Thank you. America.
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. I think I just want to, to latch on to what Honorable Natasha was saying, is that we have a presentation here that simply just reflects the annual targets. There's just no way that it's broken into what the quarterly targets are and how. I'm sure some of these targets are quarterly targets, and we don't have an indication as to how, what those targets are. And I think much has been sort of stated by the presenters in terms of what productivity is simply just to make the most of limited resources. And I want to ask the question that the interventions that you make, other than the performance outcomes that you set in your plan, how sure are you that you have made a difference, really? Because by all research and accounts, productivity in South Africa is extremely low and it's declining every year. And if you look at the productivity in the public sector and municipal sector, it is abysmal. To what extent, as an entity that is largely financed by government, are you able to make an intervention in turning around the low productivity levels within the public sector so that the taxpayer could get a greater return on every rand contributed in the form of tax? And furthermore, you have stated also earlier that sometimes I while I was sitting here and listening to your presentation, I sometimes get the impression that you are consultancy, that you project yourself as a consultant to whoever requires your services. And we know that the CCMA has a training layoff scheme. We know that the intervention that the Unemployment Insurance Fund makes in terms of saving jobs, that's their mandate. Your mandate is to improve productivity. Now, collaboration that you may have in terms of making certain interventions with the CCMA and UIF, as sort of stated in your turnaround strategy, isn't there tension between what your mandate is and what their mandate is? Their mandate is to save jobs. Your mandate is to make the most of limited resources. And if it so means that we have to decrease the workforce, it will be diametrically opposed to the objective of the attitude parties intervention. So, finally, Madam Chair, the question is to what extent, how persuasive are you in terms of getting the contracting parties, if one could call it that, to accept your recommendations? And lastly, how binding is it?
Thank you, Chair. I've got only one question. Do you, as Productivity SA, have to be approached by the companies that are at the dying stage or not at the good financial or productivity stage, or together with UIF you are able to go and assist. The reason I'm asking this is that one of your partners or future partners, South African Airways, is busy engaging on the process of retrenchment as we talk. One is not the telecom as well, is doing the same. We are getting complaints that telecom is also going through that process. So do you have to be approached to go assist? Because if UNF has got this money that can, and you as well, that can come and try to assist, how does that assistance come? And then more especially to SAE, did they ask for help or what happened? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. First and foremost, you said you're trying to help businesses get their productivity up. I know here in the Cape we have a red tape campaign. The provincial government has outlined a red tape campaign. Why about copying that in other provinces? Because it's been wholly successful here in the Western Cape. Just a comment to you. One of the issues that I've seen and read about and hear about all the time is productivity when you try and debate that with the unions. They very seldom allow productivity discussions when you have a wage demand, and maybe what you should be doing is some work within the union movement. I don't know if you've got access to the union movement, but if you have, or maybe someone can help you get access to the union movement, but if you've got access, maybe you should get some buy-in from them, because you don't have to get much buy-in from management. It's the unions that refuse to debate productivity at all. And I quote my colleague, Honorable America, who says that productivity in South Africa is one of the lowest in the world. It is from what we see in the ideas. The other thing is suspensions in the public service. This is notorious. You see, read about it all the time. Just about every parastatal, every government department has got suspensions. Maybe what you should be doing is having a look at the top echelons of productivity within the parastatals and government departments before you can talk about productivity in the lower ranks, because people normally follow their leaders. And if you've got people in most of those positions of influence suspended, you're not going to get much productivity at all. Just in terms of agro-processing, which you referred to, there are many businesses wanting to get involved in agro-processing, but they don't know where to start. They don't know where to go, and maybe what you should do is put out some sort of hotline where people who are involved in this area tell them that we can advise you where to access funding, where to access advice, and that sort of thing. It's better than just saying that's what we're interested in, agro-processing. Maybe let the smaller firms who are involved in that get involved in it. I mean, I've just spoken to a firm who are wanting to process agricultural goods and don't even know where to start. And they don't know, even when you get onto websites, you don't know what to do. Just the other comment, right at the end, you mentioned something about the Public Services Act. The Department of Labor is hardly able to cope with the amount of claims and public that get hold of it. Can you imagine what will happen when every company has to report in and say, we have a vacancy here and we want you to access someone for us? I suspect when someone resigns from a company, they then report in terms of the Public Services Act to say that we have a vacancy, please let us have someone. You'll get an answer in about 2 years' time. By then the company would have gone bankrupt. I'd be interested to see what you suggest in terms of productivity within yourselves. Thank you.
Any more questions, members?
Okay. There are two questions that I think you must leave aside for the Department of Labor to answer them. One is whether the national minimum wage will affect the productivity. That is still in the process, and as an entity of the Department of Labor, we cannot answer that question now. We don't even know how that national minimum wage should be. So I'll keep that one aside. I want you to keep that one. The red tape in the Western Cape campaign, that one also, because we need to study what is contained in that red tape campaign. It's not a question that you can answer on it now. And I also think that you don't can assist in answering that question after studying it. Then the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the first questions, where there's a concern around duplication, that what we are doing may be done by somebody else, firstly, within the public sector, we haven't found a partner that does exactly what we're doing, but we partner to complement organizations such as CEDA and other entities within DTI to complement what they're doing. And then secondly, we see ourselves as champions of productivity in the economy. And we would like to see more role players. So the more role players we have in the economy, the better it is for the economy. And we see our function as evolving. If we wake up tomorrow and the economy was flooded by service providers that are doing consulting, then we would evolve and look at other ways in which we can contribute. For an example, we can look at focusing more on research. We can look at focusing on competitiveness, etc. So we welcome more role players in the economy, but at the moment we don't think there are enough people who are in this space in terms of improving productivity. And then in terms of our limitations, that are informed by the fact that we only have an office in Cape Town, Durban, as well as Gauteng. As indicated earlier on, we would love to see ourselves in all the provinces, but what we've realized is that it costs a lot of capital to invest on infrastructure, which in itself doesn't change anything, but we would rather have more foot soldiers that can go to those provinces and make a bigger impact. And as the organization grows, we will look at having those offices. But at the moment, we are saying that let's rather invest more on foot soldiers than investing on the infrastructure. And then in terms of what impact are we making in the rural areas as well as the townships, we will do an assessment. And in our annual report, we will report comprehensively in terms of our interventions, which areas of the rural areas have we been able to impact as well as the township. And then the other question is also talking to 9.3% funding coming from our own initiative. What we need to understand is about productivity movement, that over time, as the economy develops, we've seen studies like in Japan, the private sector is able to come to the party and there's less of government intervention. But given our state of unemployment and poverty, we cannot afford to relegate productivity initiatives to private sector. And also to respond to the question that was saying, what if UI drops the funding? There are two ways to answer that. Firstly, in their presentation, they've indicated the five-year funding. Secondly, the Employment Services Act specifically places obligation on UI to fund schemes that are looking at saving jobs. So they have that obligation in terms of the Act to fund the scheme. And then in terms of increase in revenue, currently productivity say is looking at a business model where we are looking at over time increasing our own revenue, because to get to the level of about 12 million, we started at 1 million and we are sitting at 11, and we are continuing to build our own revenue. So our business model will shape up the way in which we are going to grow this even a lot faster. But having said that, there will still continue in the short term to be a need to receive funding through either UI source, the government source, or the DTI. And then in terms of the threat of being absorbed in other government departments, I think the response as well, which came from the question, was also appropriate, that the reason that we are now part of the Employment Services Act is that there was uncertainty about the entity. So if it's not defined in terms of the Act, so at any point in time, it would simply be absorbed. So that threat has been addressed by us being included in the Employment Services Act as an agent for improving productivity in the economy. And then the next question is around the numbers, which says, how come you get more money but you are saving more jobs? I think it's a question of choice and ties with the question that I was trying to address in number one, which says, where are you placed? So if we focus mainly in the Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN, we'll only be embarking on those large job losses. But if we have to go to the rural areas, we cannot exclude a company on the basis that they are employing less than 50. So we'll also be, so if we are to change the skewness and start addressing the rural areas, what we will find is that we will be, we'll still have the same number of companies, but in terms of the size will be smaller and the number will be smaller. And we'll be making a bigger impact because we'll be taking money to where it's needed most. The other question that was asked was, what is our staff establishment? We have about 102 employees, so if we fill everything, we should get very close to 110. And what my colleague Lalane also explained as well is we are not limiting ourselves to our own establishment, but what we do is we train ambassadors outside the organization, which if the capacity is lacking internally, we can use those people that we have trained. And that includes training graduates. It's intended to increase capacity. Our capacity at the moment is limited by the guaranteed funding. So we shy away from assuming in the short term that the funding from UI will go beyond the period of 5 years. So once there's certainty around that, then maybe we can look at increasing our staff complement. So we are very cautious in terms of increasing our staff complement. And then there's also a question which is more informed by our inability to pick up the brief properly. There are two questions that are linked. One is saying, why have we not indicated what we have achieved to date? Is this our first year? So we misunderstood the brief, and we were mainly focusing on the next financial year targets. And if we had understood the brief well, then we would have been able to estimate what we have been able to achieve today. So in future, when we present plans for the next financial year, we'll also be able to demonstrate our capacity to achieve in different areas. And then there's also a question about productivity low in the country. Just to put things into perspective, yes, when you look at about 230 countries, we are somewhere in the middle. The reason I'm stating the facts is that we tend to think of one extreme or the other. We are not the lowest and we're not the best. And we need to improve our productivity to be in the Premier League so such that we are in the top 20. But that will take efforts not only from productivity, say, but other key role players in the economy to improve our levels of productivity. And then in terms of are we consultancy, the answer is if consulting is responding to a need for which there is funding, we do a bit of that. So there are certain deliverables which are in the strategic plan for which we use the government funding. But should a state-owned enterprise like Transnet want our intervention. For that, there would be, for an example, Rand Water is also paying for the services that they are serving. So as you can see from the financial statement, we are a hybrid of an organization that gets money from government source as well as doing a bit of consulting. And as our brand is improving, we trust that even our consulting revenue will continue to increase. And then there's also a question, how persuasive are we? How do we ensure that when we walk away, the recommendations are implemented? The answer to that is that we try as much as we can to be persuasive, but we cannot guarantee, for an example, that when we go and talk to management and labor, 100% of the recommendations will be implemented. But for an instance, when we embark on any assignment, we do a sensitization process. We indicate exactly what will be required of management, what will be required from labor. So that's the step in which commitment takes place. There are those instances, for an example, Chairperson and honorable members, where we would be intervening in a company that is distressed. And as soon as you indicate that there would have to be sharing of information between management and labor, then there's a withdrawal from that process. So we manage expectations up front, but we cannot guarantee that 100% of the interventions would be implemented. But what helps us in terms of encouraging companies to go through the entire process is the sharing of case studies. So when you say, if you go through this process, there's likelihood that you'll achieve this particular result, that goes a long way in terms of persuading those companies. And then there was also a question around, do we wait until we are called or do we intervene? So it's a bit of both. So we conduct our interventions through referrals, and also when we are aware of a need for an intervention, we go there and assist. What we also do, honorable members, is to also alert workers to Chapter 6 of the Companies Act that says, in an event where the company is going under and management wants to go ahead and do liquidation, you are an interested party. Bring it to their attention that they need to give turnaround an opportunity before they can give up and retrench. So that's another way of ensuring that referrals also come from organized labor. So we run workshop with trade unions, we run workshop with organized labor, with organized business, and the aim is to ensure that there is enough awareness about our interventions. And then in terms of a union refusing to talk productivity during the wage discussions, our response to that is that it's the wrong timing for bringing up the issue of productivity. We always encourage management and labor to talk productivity at the planning stage such that employee and employer understand how to measure productivity, how to influence productivity, and how the fruits of productivity are to be equitably distributed. So it's inappropriate to talk productivity only at the tail end when there's dispute around wage increases. And then with regards to suspension in the public sector, I cannot provide a response on this one. It's something that we need to go back and think about it as to whether we want to get involved in this particular one. And then we are also accepting the good advice around agro-processing companies that we need to create awareness about our interventions that can go a long way in terms of improving productivity in organizations that are involved in agro-processing. There's also a request which we will immediately accede to regarding our magazine as well as monthly newsletter, so we will be sharing that with the members of Parliament with immediate effect. Yeah, I request that I be alerted if there's any particular question that I unintentionally left out.
Thank you, Chair. I mostly gathered it's just on the issue of the number of consultants that you are using within your entity.
Jefferson, thanks. Can we just have it monitored that you've referred those two questions to the Department of Labor, the one from my colleague, Honorable Begum, and a question from me. We can just put in a minute, we've referred those questions to other people that are not here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that you did refer the minimum wage, but there may be, I'm just referring to their page 17 of their report. It says their key result area is salary surveys to determine market relatedness of remuneration. Maybe we can get hold of these survey outcomes because it would help us. We're both doing the same sort of research, and it would be very interesting to see those salary surveys. Although you don't want them to answer it, maybe they can just let us have the results.
Any more clarities? Okay, just one clarity for me. This if we go to page 35 of slide 35 of your presentation, tell me the we have total revenue of 127.6 million. How did you get to that one? Is it the figures? How did you get to that 27? You must pardon me. I don't know much about financials, but I would like to see when the figure is there. At least I must know what, where does that figure come from. That's what I want to understand. If you are saying this is all what is above, then it's fine. Simple.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of use of consulting is mainly around the turnaround solution, and I'll give my colleague Mazunga to respond to that, what the limitations are around that, why we would use consultant. And then before I hand over to Mazunga and the CFO, I also want to respond to the question around salary survey. And I want to point out that that is a deliverable under HR, so it's more internal. And an answer to that is that 5 years ago, we picked up that there's a huge gap between what productivity say was paying in relation to public sector. So on an annual basis, we look at the public sector salary levels and look at reaching that. So we're not looking at the national minimum wage as was expected. So I'll now hand over to my colleague Mazunga, and then later our CFO will respond on the revenue issue.
Regarding the use of consultants in the turnaround, when we do an evaluation of what are the issues that are causing the company distress, and for example, we come up with the fact that they need to look at their marketing strategies, for instance. That is not core in terms of productivity competencies. We then, out of our approved service providers that are adjudicated once a year within the organization, we look for an expertise around marketing or marketing strategies or in a particular sector. Say, for instance, even in agriculture, there's a specific technical expertise that is needed for the turnaround to be successful. That's when we then source this consultant that is outside of our core competencies for a specific technical expertise that is needed to turn the company around. We're still responsible for them to ensure that they then deliver the the competence or the skill set within that enterprise, and then they yield the results and we manage that on behalf of the organization. So that's the extent in which we use the consultants, is and when we are outside of our expertise or the specific technical expertise from a sector base. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, just a follow-up there. Further clarification, not a follow-up. You are only using these consultants when you need expertise that you don't have in the company. Definitely a person who has been entrusted with that responsibility, it should be a person who is able to at least have some of those expertise, because this is what you are dealing with. If people are coming to you with such expertise, or you find that you are lacking, I don't understand, because when you are employing people, the type of work that a person is doing should include this expertise that you are talking about. What is the focus?
Chairperson, I'd like to respond to that. Actually, the answer to the question is twofold. One is, as she indicated, that the skills we do not have. The other one is volume. So when you look at the turnaround solution targets, and we're looking at 150 companies, and you look at our staff complement of 100, then the numbers don't add up. Then you realize that in a year, even if at all we use our staff complement only, we wouldn't be able to reach so many companies. And then secondly, when you do a turnaround, we do not always walk into a company that has efficiency challenges only. There are other challenges which may be legal, where you need somebody, there's a sheriff out there and you need legal expertise. And it may just be unique to that environment. So if we were to have a huge legal department, the following year the challenges may be different and we will not be able to fully utilize. In other instances, it's the issue of market, access to the market. We don't specialize in marketing, in that case we would prefer. In other instances, it would be HR-related issues. But to a large extent, it's more of risk management in terms of saying, yes, we can take the amount that we are given for funding turnaround solution and have a huge staff complement. The downside of that is that beyond 5 years, should there be no funding, then we would also have big challenges. So having an optimum staff level and allowing flexibility as informed by that particular intervention, it's more of a risk management issue as well. We estimate, because what we tend to do when we do turnaround solution, we don't cover the full cost. So for an example, if an organization wants assistance to the tune of, say, 300,000 and want to invest 200,000, we negotiate that they pay the difference. So it helps us to stick within the budget.
Okay, another question?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The 127 million total revenue is made up of two amounts basically. It's the transfers and grants on the one hand, and then it's the other income that we self-generated. If you look on slide 35, the 115,115,652. So it's that amount plus the 11,950 at the top. And then in the next slide, I'll show you how it is then further broken down. With your permission, Chair. On slide 36, so we get
$45 million from Department of Labor, $8 million from the DTI, and then $62 million projected for the UIF. So that will give us the $115 million.
I don't understand. The revenue, total other income, what is this total other income? Where does that come from?
The other income would be from self-generated income. The CEO earlier referred to the projects, the SAAs, the rainwaters. So for those, because they're not funded, when we do interventions, we charge them. So this is how we then earn revenue. And then the other smaller revenue would come from interest income.
I don't understand this, but I'm not going to I think I'll go through it and then ask proper questions, because I don't understand why do you add your number one there is total other income, and then you have income from sources other than you've got all these things. And you add, I don't know, I'm not a finance person, but there's something that I don't understand. I will definitely ask a follow-up question on this. I will need an advice on this, and then I'll go back. It doesn't make sense to me that you have all the list of figures, and then you have a total. And the total is composed of the figures that you jump in between.
Okay.
And then you have that one, and then I don't know what's going on. I really don't understand the sequence of your figures. But as I'm saying, I'm not finance, but I will seek advice of this question. You wanted to say something?
I wanted to try, Jefferson,
okay.
But if not, then let me try. I'm a former CFO. So firstly, the 115652. There's a slide that he presented earlier on where he showed that it's comprising of three amounts, which is money coming from the via Department of Labor, which is the grant, the money coming from DTI, which is the for workplace challenge, and the third component coming from UI. So that he's shown the breakdown of the 115. And then what he said, interest and other income, which is insignificant.
You are saying what you have said is the breakdown.
Yes, this is where the 115 is coming from.
Yeah,
we've given the 115 breakdown. And then let's go back to the other slide. So in addition to the 115, to get 117, we've added 127602, we've added 422 and 11527. What we have not done is we have not given you a breakdown of the consulting services that we'll be doing to achieve the 11,527. So if you take the 115, you add the 11 million, which you are going, the 115652 is from government source, while the 11527 will be our own generated income. So if you take 115422, which is insignificant, and the 11 million, you get to the 127. So I think what has created confusion is that the 11 and the 422 have been lumped together as other sources. That if you take other sources and you add it to the government grant, you get to 127. And what we are trying to illustrate is that the significant portion of our income is from the government source.
From sources other than grant funding.
Yes, so we go out and do
consulting. And then we also have the total other income.
The total other income is income from other sources, which is your interest plus consulting, which is the 11 million, 11.5.
Because there's a second one.
1 plus 1, then it's 2, then when we have 2, and then you must say that 1 is 2.